Right, let's talk about breathing room. Let's get back into that. And you may remember we met last week and we started this new series. The program cards are out there. Hopefully you grabbed hold of one of those. Now, incidentally, the next film night, also we've sorted that out. And there are flyers out there now for the next film night, which is the 20th of October. So if you want those as well, grab one of those. But we're talking about breathing space. And we showed you a picture that I suspect you can all relate to. I think it's going to move. Is it? Yeah, there it is. There's the picture. And we said it's okay for your wardrobe to look like this, but it is not okay for your life to look like this. Chaos. And we're talking about breathing space, creating some margin. Breathing space, we said, there you go, there's a bit of margin. Suddenly you can see the walls and the floor again. Suddenly it feels like something you can operate in. And your life needs to be like that. Your life should have space and margin. We said this was a bit of a definition. Breathing space is the space between your current pace and your limits. And life is always better, we said, lived with breathing space. Easy to say. I've discovered this week, not quite so easy to do. But it is better, isn't it? When it's lived with breathing space. We all know that. When we live consistently at the limit of our finances, when you're always on the edge financially, when you're always on the edge of your time, you have no spare time, or when you're always, because of that, neglecting important relationships in your life, there's no time for relationship. Three things happened, we said. Three things. One, you feel more stressed. Two, your focus will always narrow. The more under pressure you are, the more you will focus on that pressure point and on nothing important around you. Like standing on the edge of a cliff. Your focus is on the cliff. But if you stand back from the cliff, your focus can be on the scenery around you. That's how it works. And also, not only does our focus narrow, our relationships suffer. They often suffer. And what did we say about happiness in a series a while ago? Happiness is not about a what, it's about a who. Your happiness is about your relationships every time. Hopefully you've worked that one out. And if you torpedo your relationships, particularly in terms of how you run your life and how it looks, then you will torpedo your own happiness. That's the truth. That is the truth. Last week we discovered the Bible speaks into this, and when God had an opportunity to start a society, he started an entire nation from scratch. Not often that happens, but he did. It was called Israel. They were slaves, and then suddenly they were a nation in their own right. He took them out of Egypt, and he built in breathing space. He did it through laws. Do you remember what those laws were? There's a little recap. See if you remember any of the things God put in place to give the people breathing space. What were the three things? Any ideas? Obvious one.
Sabbath.
Yeah, Sabbath, obvious. You will not work on this day. You will take a day off. Don't you love a God? Don't you love God because he says take a day off? Isn't he great? You have this impression God says, no, you're not good enough, you need to work harder, you need to try harder. He says, take a day off. Fantastic. I'm God, you're not. Take a day off. I'll run things. It's okay. Trust me. I love him. He's great. So, take a day off. What were the other ones? There were two other practices that he insisted that the people did, this new nation. What was that? Tithing. Somebody said tithing. Yes, tithing. In other words, don't live on the edge of your finances. There will always be this 10% that you're not living on. There will always be this margin. It teaches you to live with margin. It's amazing. It's not just about, you know, supporting stuff and generosity. It's about those things. But it's teaching us to live with margin. The other one, which you probably may not remember. Yes, the laws of gleaning. In other words, don't go to the edge of your field. If you leave a sheath of corn in the middle as you're clearing up, you don't go back and get it. You leave it. You don't live on everything. You don't live on everything you produce. There is always margin. It allows you to be generous in life. So he built margin into this nation, this new nation. And today we're going to focus on your time and your diary, because our inclination is to do with our diary what you have done with your garage. Same principle. What you do with your garage, you do with your diary. You put a load of stuff in it and you never take anything out. And your diary is the same. You put stuff in, you never take anything out. And it starts to feel a little oppressive and a little bit like that, doesn't it? So here's how you know if you've lost control of your time. Have you lost control of your time? You are doing more, a lot more, but you are enjoying it all a lot less. You don't say no to anything. You don't say no. You're always arriving late or stressed or excusing yourself for leaving early. You do that a bit? I'm late, rushing in, bit stressed, I've got to go, sir. You know, that's a hint. If that's happening all the time, that is okay occasionally, but if that's happening all the time, your life is probably looking a bit like that. There's a lot of self-help books out there, but today we're going to talk about one application, and I know it sounds a bit grandiose, right, but this could change your life. And I think it really could change your life, because it will change your time. And what is your life if it isn't time? Your life is about time, isn't it? Your life is your time. So if it changes your time, it could change your life. So it's that significant. Turn to Psalm 90. Have you got a Bible near you? See if you can find a Bible and find Psalm 90. And if someone can read out the page number for Psalm 90, that'd be handy. What page have you got?
496
in your seat Bibles. Hopefully you've got that. Unless you've got a completely different version in front of you, in which case it won't be 496. But there you go. Try that. Psalm 90. And this one, interesting. You see who it's written by? Can you see? Does it tell you who it's written by? Moses, not David. Which is interesting. There are some psalms in there that were written way before David, and this is one of those. Now listen, if you want wise counsel on the use of your time, Moses is a great person to start with. Because if you think about Moses' life, he was a guy who had to juggle. He knew about time in all sorts of different lives, because he lived four lives in his lifestyle. He did. You remember his first part of his life, he lived in Pharaoh's household. So he lived in that sort of environment. Very quite intense, quite political, well-educated, sort of upper middle class, you know, top of the tree, really. So he's lived in that context. And then he lived for 40 years after that as a shepherd, complete contrast. I suspect shepherds have slow days. Do you think they have slow days? Do you think they have slow days in Pharaoh's court? Probably not. You think they have slow days on the hillside with a bunch of sheep? A lot. So he's got two completely different lives that he experienced. Pharaoh, shepherd, and then suddenly he's a revolutionary. Suddenly he's at the center of world events and the forming of a new nation. He's up against Pharaoh. It's all politics and miracles and the world is shaking and he's at the center of it. And he lived that life as well. He was the Che Guevara of his day. He was. And then he spends the next 40 years leading a rather difficult bunch of people around in a desert. For 40 years, 500,000, we think, at least, people, and his job is to lead them. Now, if anybody could tell you about how to use time and the different ways our lifestyle is affected by that, here's a guy who's lived it all and knows. There is none of us in this room whose lifestyle Moses probably wouldn't understand. None of us. So he's a good guy. In terms of time management, he has seen it from every angle and every lifestyle. He knows. So Moses has seen that. And he gives us some insight that's stunning. Here you go. Let's run through this. Psalm 90, verse 1. Lord, through all the generations you've been our home, before the mountains were born, before you gave birth to the earth and the world, from beginning to end, you are God. It's what we've been worshipping about this morning. There is this glorious picture of God bookending time. He's like the bookends at the beginning and the end of history. No beginning, no end. This glorious picture of our God. And he says this. You turn people back to dust, saying, return to dust, you mortal. It's a bit, and do you like Lord of the Rings? It's a bit Gandalf, this, isn't it? Return to dust. You shall not pass. It's that sort of statement. Return to dust, says the Lord. It's Moses' way of saying, God controls all of your beginnings, and he controls all of your endings. You are entirely in his hands. If you have found out, there is a belief, even today, even among people who never go to church, even among people who do not believe in God, there is a belief that our lives are controlled by powers higher than us. And here's the proof. Here is the proof that I think everybody really believes that our lives are not entirely in our hands. If you found out tomorrow you had a terminal disease, would you pray? If you found out tomorrow and you went to the doctor's surgery and they said, yeah, you've got 6 months to live, would you pray? Would you talk in some shape or form? I think you would. And I think everybody does. I think everybody sends an arrow heavenward. Everybody believes this deep down, because you wouldn't pray if you didn't. Deep down, we think that's true. Psalm 90, verse 4. For you, 1,000 years are as a passing day, as brief as a few night hours. One version says, as brief as a watch in the night. A watch in the night was a three-hour period. A watch, if you were on watch, you had 3 hours, and then you could go back to bed. Somebody else took over. It's about a three-hour period. Ever said, where did that year go? Have you ever found yourself saying that? The older you get, the more you say it, don't you? Have you ever said that? Where did that year go? I mean, we're talking about advent calendars, for goodness sake. What happened? And here we are, 2017, and we're talking about Christmas already, the end of the year. Well, imagine what it looks like for God. If you think your time goes fast, and it does the longer you've lived. I've lived 50 years, and the years seem to get faster. Imagine what it's like if you've lived for eternity. How fast is a year? That's probably slow for God. Bang, it's gone. Imagine what it's like to be God. How must your life look to an everlasting God? It must be so brief. Imagine how brief your existence is on this planet in God's eyes. Wow. And he sort of confirms it. Moses sort of rubs that in a bit. Here's what he says. You sweep people away like dreams that disappear. They're like grass that springs up in the morning. In the morning it blooms and it flourishes, but by evening it's dry and it's withered. Anybody feeling a bit dry and withered? Oil of Ulay tends to work quite well, I swear by that. But he's talking about you and me. He's talking about our life from the perspective, not of us, but of God. This is how God perceives our existence. It's so brief. He may have had a new baby. Anybody got any grandchildren appeared recently? Yeah, you got grandchildren, and what usually happens is you hold that baby in your arms and you say, oh, look at this new life, I wonder what they're going to be, I wonder what they're going to grow up to be, and they've got their whole life ahead of them. But to God, gone. Starts and gone. So fast. To an eternal God. Amazing. Pop up in the morning, and we're gone by evening. And that would be a long time in God's eyes. Psalm 90, verse 10, just keeps rubbing it in that how God sees us and the perspective of God on our lives. 70 years are given to us, some even to 80, and we know now that's pushing 90. You see that program about 90-year-old drivers and things like that? That's quite fun. That's worrying, isn't it? But there you go. So let's say 90, 2017, so let's say 90. But even the best years are filled with pain and trouble, so they disappear Soon they disappear. They do go so fast, don't they, our lives? And we fly. Anybody depressed yet? Am I really encouraging you on Sunday morning? Are you thinking, I'm really glad I came to church now? My life is over. Thank you very much. It's all going to be gone. That's amazing, isn't it? And Moses is talking from personal experience here about his experience of life and how fast it goes and what it's like. 40 years looking at sheep thinking, is this it? And then it all kicks off. He's the center of the world. And then 40 years walking in a circle, literally walking in a circle in a desert with a bunch of world-class moaners. Can you see Moses in that statement? Can you see Moses talking from personal experience? That's what he's doing. I mean, if you think your life has a bit of pain and trouble, think about his life. Running a nation of 500,000 people in a desert, walking in a circle for 40 years. Your life is easy, trust me, compared to this guy. Psalm 90, verse 11. So he knows what it's like. He knows how fast it goes. He knows the content of our lives. It's sometimes difficult. Who can comprehend the power of your anger? Your wrath is as awesome as the fear you deserve. You know what? Scholars have been debating what this verse 11 means for years. It's such a complex Hebrew verse that they're still not entirely sure they've got this verse nailed down. But here's what we think it means. Because it seems a bit odd that this verse is there after talking about our time and the brevity of our lives and da da da. But here's what we think it means. It means this. If we could see God as he is, we'd give him the reverence that he's due. Me, tiny, brief, here today, gone tomorrow, me. You, God, everlasting to everlasting. No end, no beginning. A day is 1,000 years. A year is 1,000 days. Amazing. And I think my life is flashing by. What must it look like to God to see my life? It must just go. In his eyes, in the light of eternity. Moses is saying, if we could see God as he is, we'd spend our lives taking him a lot more seriously. This immense God, who is so much bigger than we are. And here's another way of saying that. Here's another way of putting this, which I think is what he's getting at. If we could see God as he really is, we would be more careful with the time, the brevity of the time that we now understand we have. Because we are so fleeting. From God's perspective, we are so brief. We would be more considerate of the time that we have and more considerate of the God who has given it to us. We don't think like this normally, do we? It takes Moses to wake us up to the context of our lives from God's perspective. Not mine, God's perspective. How brief it is. But by contemplating the brevity of my life from God's perspective, it will impact, won't it, what I do with my time. If I think about it like that, that's going to impact what I do with my time. My life is so brief, so fast. What am I going to do with it? Here's the application. This is Moses coming down, boiling it all down. Moses says, okay, what am I talking about? Here's what I'm talking about. This is what you need to take home. Teach us to realize the brevity of life so that we may grow in wisdom. That's his point. Teach us. This is Moses' application. Just think about this. We often spend our lives very different from this. We spend our lives as if our kids will always live in our home. And we don't consider that this is a limited time I've got with these guys. We live as if we'll always have this job. I've got news for you. You won't. So what are you going to do with it in the limited time that you will have it? And it is limited. We live as if we'll always have this physical ability. I will not always be this picture of health and physical vitality that I currently am. I'm fooling myself there. I already know that I am not what I was when I was at 20. I, you know, But I've got something now, and what am I going to do with it? It is limited. But we live as if this is never going to change, is it? It is. We live as if we always have each other. We live, don't we, as if we will always have each other on this earth. You want the truth? You won't. Some of you have experienced that. Some of you know what that feels like. Some of you are going through that. My wife, my kids, my parents. And we live as if our time is unlimited with these things that are so important. And yet here's Moses' takeaway. Here's what he says you need to apply. Teach us to realize the brevity, the limited nature of your life, so that we may grow in wisdom. Moses says, don't live as if everything is unlimited. Don't do that. Live as if your days are numbered. Live as if they are limited. This isn't totally alien to you. You actually do this. Everybody in this room has done this at some point. Usually it's because you've got a deadline. Deadlines clarify what you do with your time, don't they? They do. They do. I remember when I was at college and the deadline was approaching for the dissertation. I prioritized that, and I spent that period of time in the run-up to that deadline focused on that one thing. That's what I did. Because I had a deadline, it focused me on the use of my time. I had to focus or I was going to be in trouble. Those of you who've got married, you've lived like this. You've lived like this. You've got ready, haven't you? The deadline, here is the day, and you've made the arrangements, and you've put things in place, and you've counted down the days, and you've checked the diary. You said, right, we've got this much time to go, and these are the things we still need to do and sort and organize, and we're going to focus our time on getting these things done. We've lived like this. We do this. And whenever there is a deadline, you spend your time wisely often in the light of it. But with things like family, with things like jobs, there often isn't a deadline, is there? So we don't spend our time wisely with those things that are really important. Moses asks us the question, what if you lived that way? What if you lived as if there was a deadline all the time? He answers it for you. If you live like that, you're going to grow in wisdom. If you live like that, you're going to grow in wisdom. In terms of what we put in terms of what we leave out, in terms of what we do with our time, in terms of what we don't do with our time. He says, if you live like that, you'll grow in wisdom. Here's a summary. Here's a summary of Moses and what he's talking about. Remember, our time is limited. The things you have now will not always be there. The people you have now will not always be there. So, our time is limited. And remembering that provides us with wisdom to know how to spend our limited time. That's what he's talking about. So I'm going to save you some time by giving you some wisdom that people often gain at the end of life. Okay, here we go. I'm going to take you to the end of your life, and then I'm going to apply what you've discovered right now. That's what we're going to do. I'm going to save you some time. And this is from a lady called Bonnie Ware. Bonnie Ware spends her time with people in the last 12 weeks of their life. She is a nurse in a hospice in Australia. And she decided one day, I will start asking these people who have 12 weeks to live, I will start asking them a specific question or two. And I will listen to what they say. And then I will change my life according to what I discover, because the wisdom tends to come too late. So I'm going to not make that mistake. So that's what she did. So in 2009, she started asking her patients if they had any regrets. Here are the top two bits of wisdom that you need in terms of this one. Here's what she said. Let's start with number two, and then we'll get to number one. The top two regrets. Number two, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. That's what they all said. They got 12 weeks to live. And they're saying, you know what? I wish I hadn't worked so hard. I'm doing you a favor here. I'm telling you this now. You now have a chance to change that before you get to the end, so you don't have to have that regret. Have you ever met anybody who was on their deathbed and said, I wish I'd spent more time at work? Has anybody experienced that? Has anybody in this room ever heard anybody say that? Strange. Strange. This is what she said. And I'm not decrying work. Work is good. God says work is good. God says to do it well and to do it diligently is good. The Bible is very clear about that. But something in us gets a bit skewed, doesn't it? And this is what she said. This came from every male patient that I nursed. They missed their children's youth and their partner's companionship. Women also spoke of this regret, but as most were from an older generation, many of the female patients had not been breadwinners. So we're entering a new stage now. I think where women are more of breadwinners, and sometimes the key breadwinner in families. And the world has changed, hasn't it, since this generation. But that's what she says. Listen to this. All of the men I nursed deeply regretted spending so much of their lives on the treadmill of a work existence. These people were dying. They had a chance to reflect on their lives. If we don't learn now that our time is not unlimited, we will spend our time unwisely and end up with an avoidable regret. This is totally avoidable, this regret. Regret number one. Let's do the big one, the one that everybody said, the most popular regret of all. Here's what they said. I wish I had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. That was the biggest regret of these people who were dying in this hospice. Listen to what she says about that. This was the most common regret of all. When people realize that their life is almost over and look back clearly on it, it is easy to see how many dreams have gone unfulfilled. Most people had not honored even half of their dreams and had to die knowing that it was due to choices they had made or not made. Health brings a freedom very few realize until they no longer have it. Now, I've just done you a favour. I've fast-forwarded your life and I've dragged some wisdom from the end of your life to your life today. So what will you do with that wisdom? What will you do with it when you look at your current diary? What will you do with this based on your current diary? Your time is limited. Your time with your job, with your family at home, with this season of life, with your health, it is limited. How will you therefore spend it? And will you decide to spend it only now on what really, really matters? And there's going to be some pushback on this. There's always some pushback on this. But Phil, if I don't do everything right now that I possibly can, and here are some of your excuses, here's what you're going to say. If I don't do as much as I possibly can right now, I'll never make it. Here's the question. What is it? What is it? You don't know, do you? What is it that you're trying to make? You better make sure you've chosen the right it if you're going to use your very limited time on it. What is it? To be honest, most of my its and most of your its come from other people. Most of us had either very successful parents and were always intimidated by them and trying to live up to them. That's our it. Or the rest of us had completely dysfunctional parents and we're trying desperately to avoid ever being like them, and that's our it. And then in the middle are the other parents who were not, you know, well, they were all right, I suppose. But yeah, yeah. That, I speak as a parent, trust me. I know I can mess up my own kid's life. I'm a human being and not perfect. And we inherit stuff, is the way it works. But most of us, it is given to us from somebody else. We don't know. We haven't made our own it up. We're trying to fulfill somebody else's expectations or perspective or what we think they want, and we're not even checking that out. So what is our it? I'll never make it. What is it? And often it's somebody else's stuff. It's not even yours. So why are you spending your time doing that? Be careful. I'll fall behind. Behind who? Behind who? Seriously. We're brought into a culture of keeping up with the Joneses. I mean, we do have some Joneses in the fellowship. Is it those Joneses you're trying to keep up with? Are you trying to keep up with them? Or are you trying to keep up with... Who are these Joneses? And why are you trying to keep up with them? And what difference would it make if you didn't? Okay, somebody else is driving a BMW. Do you have to? I don't think you have to. I don't think you need to. And there's the other one. I will be poor. If I don't spend all of my life, all of my time on these things, I will be poor. Let me ask you a question. Some of us think that poverty is just a financial issue. Let me tell you, I've met tons of people who are financially absolutely loaded, but they're really poor. They're poor relationally, they're poor emotionally, they're poor in so many parts of their lives. And I'm not getting about wealth here. That's a red herring. It's about what we prioritize our time with. And so often we let culture and we let the comparison trap and we let all that stuff dictate what we do with our time. And we never ask the question, what is poor? You know, I've met some really rich people in my life, but they didn't have 10 quid to their name. But I count them as rich people. The quality of their relationships and their families and their lives and the joy that they express. I'd say they're rich people. What is poor? What constitutes poor and poverty? And here's the other one. I won't be accepted. Here's another pushback. Accepted by who? You know what? In 5 or 10 years, you probably won't have that person's telephone number in your mobile anymore. You won't even have the same mobile anymore. And you won't be in touch with them, and you'll never see them because they'll have moved, or they'll have got a promotion, or they'll have, yeah, all sorts of things will happen. And this person that you are desperately trying to gain acceptance from right now won't even be a part of your life, but you spent hours and hours and hours and hours and hours trying to please them and get accepted by them, and then they're not there anymore. What a waste of your time. Do you understand how important this is? And how we so easily let other people determine and culture determine how we spend our very precious, very limited, in God's lies, a blade of grass, here today, gone tomorrow, how we spend that precious moment. And Moses says, realize the brevity of your life and determine the best way to spend your very limited time. So here's some homework. Did you get a little card when you came in? Did you get a little card? There's your homework for this week. And what I want you to do is fill that in this week. And you don't have to do it on your own, because I know sometimes it's a bit of a wrestling match. Oh, I haven't got the time. You can use your family time. Sit down over a meal with your kids and with your wife and your husband and your parents or whatever, and sit down and have a conversation. Okay, how would I fill this in? Talk about it at home. Talk about it in life group. Maybe you want to spend a bit of time having a chat about it. But that's what I want you to do. Here's what you need to do. The plus. What do I need to add to my schedule that is really important, but it's not there? What do I need to add to my life that I'm badly neglecting at the moment, but is so important? It really matters. At the end of my day, I want to say, I spent time doing that, and that matters to me. And then the minus. What do I need to take away? Because like your garage, you can't just chuck stuff in. You have to take stuff out and take it down the skip sometimes. So what do I need to subtract? What is not important? What is not essential? What will I get to the end of my life and say, oh, I wish I hadn't spent all that time doing that. That was pointless. That was a waste of my time. And then the next one is, what do I need to do, those little symbols, what do I need to do more of? That's the little more than. What do I need to do more of? So I'm already doing it, but I need to ramp that one up. And the other one is, what do I need to do less of? So there's something I'm doing, I'm spending a lot of time. It matters, I need to keep doing it, but I need to do it less because I'm going to regret spending too much time on that. I need to spend some, but not a lot. What do I need to do more of? What do I need to do less of? So take that home. Talk about it in your life groups. Talk about it in your families. Ring your mum up, or your dad, or your sister, or your brother, and have a chat with them. Talk to people about it and see where you get. And see if you can't put it into action. Because talking about this stuff's fine. The trick... Oh, am I discovering? The trick is making any change. So have a crack at that and see how you get on. Okay. We're gonna. Yeah.
Can I just say a quick word?
Yeah, sure.
I just want to say, Phil, thank you. That was just so helpful. Really, really helpful. I just wanted to thank you and commend you for the preparation you put into these things.
Thank you, Brian.
I just want to say that I read a book when my kids were small, about 34, 35 years ago, written by a pastor in America called For Fathers Who Aren't in Heaven. Good title for a book. And this guy did a survey that covered a lot of men. It was men particularly he was looking at, right across the United States. What was your greatest regret as you look back in your twilight years? These weren't dying men, they were just older men like me. And the number one regret that they had was they didn't work harder at their relationships with their children, their wives, with their family, with neighbors. And that just follows on from those two regrets that they had.
Yeah.
I worked so hard, didn't have time for people. And that I was trying to be not accepting myself as I am, my relationship with myself.
Yeah.
And they regretted more than anything else. They looked back in their lives, was I wish I had worked harder at my relationships. And that's, I want to tell my kids that. Thank you for
that.
All right.
Thank you, Ivan. And I don't pretend any of this is easy because I've just had a week where I haven't, I've broken the Sabbath rule this week. I haven't done it. And this isn't easy. And if you're struggling with it, let's form a club, shall we? And let's talk about it together. And let's keep each other accountable, and maybe let's try and build this space in our lives that God intended for human beings so that we might enjoy the life he's given us, not just endure it. So let's do that. We're coming to communion, and we're going to share communion this morning. But this whole issue of God being so big and God being eternal and yet our lives being so brief is a point of worship for me. I was thinking about this week and it just made me realize the love of God for someone like me whose life in God's perspective is so, how insignificant, really. 70 years to God, 80 years, 90 years. How fast does that go? And yet God sees me and he would sacrifice his own son for me. Even though I am so small and so brief and so passing, and yet he would not even withhold his son for me. I thought that was amazing. And it really moved me to think that God, this immense God, considers me. Listen to this. our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. You have set your glory in the heavens. This is a huge God, timeless God. When I consider the heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which have lasted for eons, haven't they? And yet they are nothing compared to the age of God. When I consider them and the things you have set in place, what is mankind? What is Phil? That you are mindful of him. What are human beings that you would care for them? And yet this is our God, that this huge God considers us and would spend his most precious possession, his only son, on someone so brief and so small as me. I think that's wonderful. And let's sing a song. And as we do that, maybe some folks could come to the front and just help me distribute the bread and wine. Just sit at the front during the song, and we're going to play a song. Would you like to stand with me? And this song just talks about how big God is, and yet he is so focused on you. It's amazing.
Above all powers, above all kings, above all nature and all created things, above all wisdom and all the ways of man, you were here before the world began. Above all kingdoms, above all thrones, above all wonders the world has ever known, above all wealth and treasures of the earth, there's no way to measure what you're worth.
Maybe you'd like to just take a seat. Psalm 103 says this: as a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear him. For he knows what Moses has just said. He knows how we are formed. He remembers we are but dust, blown on the wind, so brief. The life of mortals, says Psalm 103, is like grass. We flourish like the flower of the field. The wind blows over it, and it is gone. That's my life in God's eyes. And the place remembers it no more. And you would expect this huge God who sees my life like that to ignore me. And yet here's what the psalmist says: but from everlasting to everlasting, the Lord's love is with those who fear him, and his righteousness with their children, with those who keep his covenant and remember and obey his precepts. Lord does not ignore us. He does everything for us. And though I am dust and here today and gone tomorrow, this is his response to me. He loves us so much, he did not withhold his only son. That's how much he loves you. And Jesus reminded them of that when he took the bread and when he blessed it and broke it and said, this is my body broken for you, that grass that is here today and gone tomorrow, that dust that is blown on the wind, and yet I am willing to give my life for you. This is my body, broken for you. Take it and eat it. And remember me. Remember who I am. And remember, despite who I am and how big I am, I love you. As you take the bread, would you eat it? You don't have to be a member of the church here to share in communion. You just have to want to say thank you to Jesus for what he's done for you. So take the bread and eat it as you receive it and give thanks in your heart. And on the screen will be some music, which I always find quite moving when I consider how small I am, and yet this immense, unmeasurable love of God for someone.